Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon, Rochester. Yes, you are listening to this edition of Soundbites, and I happen to be Dave Enright, joined along with my friend...
I'm Jerry Seward.
Thank you, Jerry. There, I got you, I think. Now, go ahead.
I'm Jerry Seward.
Not hearing you. Okay, we'll fix that in a moment, but yeah, as you can tell, Nick unfortunately called me last night, and... Oh, that poor guy is definitely hurting for certain. He could hardly talk at all, and I think I still saw Steve's picture up on one of the billboards going along. He's one step ahead of the law, like just like that other gentleman. But he and Nick hopefully will return next week. Nick in a little bit better health, and, you know, that's the way life goes. But Jerry and I think we can cover the 2 hours, no problem, don't you think?
I think so.
I got to... pat you up here a little bit, I think, my friend. Go ahead, talk to him. Go ahead.
I think we can. Yeah,
yeah, there we go. Just taking a little bit there to get it in there. Apple, though, surprisingly, is going to flinch. Apple announced that, Taylor Swift decided to withhold her latest album, 1989, from Apple's music store during the new streaming service 3-month free trial. Apple wasn't going to pay royalties to the holders. Shockingly, Apple blinked and announced Sunday night, that is, that they'd reverse their decision. Oh, gee, you think? On Sunday, Apple's senior VP of Internet Services and Software, Eddie Q, tweeted, #, Apple Music, will pay the artist for streaming, even during the customer-free trial. Well, yeah, if you want still to have customers around, don't you think? I mean, as it is, and I think you'll agree, you know, that's one thing we struggle with right now with the Internet, is the piracy of some music.
Well, you know, Apple's, I love Apple's thinking of this, is because, you know, we're not going to get any revenue for this for 3 months. We're not going to pay the artists that we're streaming for 3 months. But, you know, the millennial generation actually is just used to getting a lot of their content for free, for streaming, or for very low cost. They're mm-hmm. They don't usually buy whole albums anymore.
Yeah.
They buy individual songs, or they just stream through some service they already have, you know, like Pandora or Spotify or whatever. So they're just not used to paying for things like that. So,
yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I can see them, you know, wanting to get more folks to get in on their service, and that's why they are offering, you know, that free service for, 90 days to pull more people in and enjoy. Because, like you say, it is nice, I will say about that, going to the Apple Store and selecting the tunes off of an album.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, bottom line, as much as I like to save money as everybody else, I'm sorry, those artists put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and they don't, it's not like they're getting hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, but you and I grew up, when we wanted a song, we'd go down and we'd buy the 45.
Five, yes.
And on the flip side, you might get something you really didn't care about, but, you know, hey, it was there too. Or
sometimes all of a sudden it was another big hit.
Right.
On the other side, you never knew. But yeah, like you say, we had the choice then. And when I'm talking about money, folks, we're talking pennies. They're literally only making pennies.
Exactly.
Per, you know, download and everything. It's not like they're, oh, you know, you're paying, say, $15 for an album, and they're getting, you know, 12 of it. Well, I bet you they're lucky if they get a buck or two.
You know, that's true for most anything created, whether it's a book, it's a movie, it's a music, whatever it is. The artists really get a very, very, very small percentage of all that.
Yeah, and of course, Nick does have, even though he's been sick, he can't talk, but he still does have a poll of the week up there. And he's got up there Taylor Swift's Apple Blinks. Unbelievable. Not surprising. Apple, I'm disappointed. Taylor, who? Now? Apple, what? No? All right, you can go to the Soundbites webpage. That's soundbites.org. And that's Soundbites with a Y, Francis would want us to tell you. And register your vote. I can't bring it up right now, but I...
Well, we got 29 total votes so far.
Super.
And 34% of them is, that's not too surprising. And also 34% is, Taylor who now?
Jerry, tell us a little bit what you do here. I mean, you know, you help keep the Soundbites website going along with a lot of other things.
Yeah, I'm an internet and technology consultant, and, you know, for about, well, 15, 20 years now, we've been doing web hosting and web creation online for people. So most of the time today we spend in consulting with businesses to help them learn how to use technology to be more efficient, more productive, and to save money.
You're also traveling all over the U.S. with the various servers and that you've got. You're a busy man.
I don't travel. They stay in place. And I use servers that are around the country and, in fact, in other countries as well. But I don't travel to see. I pay people in those remote places to do the hands-on things.
You are amazing, though. I mean, you know, I mean, like I say, you are gracious to host the Soundbites webpage, and you've done so much for us over the years. I mean, what, we've known each other for, what, at least 3 decades?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you, Nick, Steve, and I mean, we have seen so much change over the time. It is unbelievable. And what you've done and getting things up and, oh, no big deal. You know, to us, it's a catastrophe when the, you know, the website goes down and that, and it's like, yeah, no big deal. I'll just move you over to here. Yeah, easy for you to say, but, you know, that has always been very special, and we can't thank you enough there, buddy. All right, tell you what, we're going to go to the phones, and we've got Carl from Pottstown, PA. How you doing there, sir?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Hey, you know, not bad. It's a little rainy, but, you know, we're kind of getting used to that weather. How about down there?
It's not bad here. I haven't been outside yet, so I'm not sure if it's raining or not. I'll have to take a look at
it. Oh, there you go. Down the road. Go ahead. What's your question?
I have a mouse problem here. I have a computer running Windows 7 Professional, mm-hmm. 8 meg of RAM. It's a pretty nice machine, but the mouse continually freezes only for a second or two, and then it starts moving again. And it seems like it freezes after I click on something, after I click on a link. Or look around a little bit. It's like the processor's doing something else, and it's just ignoring the mouse for a second or two. It's a mouse with a USB connector, so I have it plugged directly in. And as soon as it unfreezes, which takes about a second or so, sometimes 2 seconds, this is the sound I hear. I'm going to play it for you right now. And then it unfreezes.
Mm-hmm. Now, the batteries in it are fresh?
I don't think so, no.
You know, I mean, if it's freezing up a little bit, the other key thing that I'd be worried about is you have Dance the Tango checked for any malwares.
I haven't gone through it completely yet, no.
You might have something else that has slipped in there as far as malware or spyware that is trying to take, you know, milliseconds off your clock speed to do something else, like you said, in the background. So you might want to run both the Super Anti-Spyware and the Malware Bytes just to see what's going on there. Another thing, since you're running Windows 7, is if you've been into msconfig.
Right.
Yeah, if you go into msconfig, if you go down to the start button for those folks out there that don't know, if you go down to the lower left-hand corner of the start button, it opens up a little window. In there, you can type in msconfig, all one word, hit enter. It will open up this window. And one of the tabs on the windows is startup. Now, in the startup are a lot of programs. And to be honest with you, most of them you can turn off. But a lot of programs want them running just in case you might want to use that program. And it's really unnecessary, but it's eating up clock time. So you might want to check there also to see what other things might be running in the background. I mean, having the spyware software and essential stuff like that, you know, that's good to have running in the background because it will protect, you know, other stuff sneaking in and your antivirus. But some of these others, like, say, QuickTime Player or Flash, You know, what are some of the others there, Jerry?
Come on, even some things like a PDF reader. It depends on the programs that you install. Sometimes when you install a program, even though, you know, you have no intention of using it until you really need it, it loads itself or it sets itself up to start automatically just in case you might want to use it sometime.
Right. It's called a TSR, which means terminate and stay resident. And it just sits there in the background. But yet, you know, the computer will still sit there and say, you need me now? You need me now? And it's taking away clock time.
Right.
So, I mean, that's something to look into, my friend.
Okay, I'll give that a try. Thanks a lot.
All right, no problem. Give us a buzz. You know the number. We've talked to you before. And let us know how you make out.
Okay, thanks.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, one thing I do want to mention, just to jump in here for a second. Today is the last day of the Jazz Fest. Yes, I know it is raining, folks, but you know what? The Jazz Fest still goes on. There are still a lot of venues up there that are, you know, going on. They're, you know, dry and that. And please, don't miss out on, you know, it's been a fantastic week. I mean, I started going, you know, it started last Friday. And up until today, it has been one fantastic week for some really great music. Of course, I got to hear my group, Soul Rebels. I got to listen to them, MC them with Maggie Brooks there. That was a great time, along with a lot of other great acts. There were over, by the end of this Jazz Fest, over 231 acts performing at the Jazz Fest. Yeah.
And I think the crowds were bigger this year than they have been. Maybe because of the great weather and the time of year.
Yeah, they were expecting over 214,000 folks. We spoke to one gentleman. Him and his wife, both in wheelchairs, took the bus up, I think it was from St. Louis. They're down in St. Louis. Took the bus up here to come up to the Jazz Fest. They've been coming for a couple years, and they enjoy it so much. They said, yeah, we're coming up here because we enjoy this, and it's a week of just great entertainment. They bought the passes in there. It was just unbelievable. You know, they stopped by, and so many other folks from Canada, I mean, all over the U.S. that come up here. We have now been moved up. The Xerox Rocher International Jazz Fest has been moved up to one of the top 10 jazz events in the world to come to. Now, that says a lot for the starters of this program that, you know, I mean, Jeff and them can't be thanked enough from something that started 14 years ago as just a weekend event, you know, in this one place. And it's like, yeah, let's see what it goes. Because the other thing, folks, you got to realize is with the Jazz Fest, it's not just jazz. I mean, they had Blood, Sweat, and Tears up there last Saturday. And that was a jammed pack group. You literally, with the new app, could listen to some of these artists. And you should try it because you know what? Yeah, it might be coming to a close this year, but you can look at you know what was played there between now and the next Jazz Fest and start rethinking about coming on down. And if you do go down, please stop by the tent. Rob and the crew will still be there. Stop by, say hi. And we have this little cube. Well, I shouldn't say little cube. It's 18 by 18 by 18, I think. Clear. And it needs to be filled up with this green paper stuff. And, you know, like we say, if everybody went up there and put in $1... out of 214,000 people, if half of them went up and put in $1, you know, each year when we have to come to you twice a year to do the fundraiser, we wouldn't have to do it. But, you know, like I say, there's still some great music. Please don't short yourself and get up there and enjoy the Jazz Fest because it's a great time, you know, and it's one of the few venues that Rochester actually shines on. So. All right, yeah, one of the other things, as Carl, you know, was pointing out, a lot of the stuff right now, and I've had a number of folks come in with computers, and they're sitting there, you know, saying, it's acting slow and all this other, it must be viruses. I've been seeing more and more, not viruses, which, you know, folks have, you know, that's what it's been for decades. Right. Oh, my machine must be influenced with viruses. Well, you know what? It's not, and Coming up in a few seconds here, you know what? We'll come back and tell you a little bit more. But right now, I've got to take a short break. But Jerry and I will be back in a few minutes, and we'll explain what we were talking about, that maybe we can help you keep your machine clean. Right here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Jerry Seward.
And like I said, poor Nick is suffering with a very bad sore throat. And I think Steve is still two steps ahead of the law. But, you know, they'll both be here hopefully next week in better health. And we'll continue on. But Jerry and I are just holding down the fort. And we were starting to talk, though, Jerry, you know, about just not being viruses on computers and that type of stuff. But we're kind of off air talking about, you know, the tablets, too.
Yeah, all devices have these problems, you know, and whether you got an iPhone, an iPad, an Android, or whatever, you know, people are often noticing things are slowing down, they look like they're clogged or whatever, it's taking them longer, and there's a whole variety of reasons for that. Sometimes, yeah. Especially with Android, they're coming out with some of these new versions that, you know, aren't quite ready for prime time, mm-hmm. They don't work across all devices the way they're supposed to.
Right.
Also, a lot of people install apps on their phone that continually run in the background, just like we have the TSRs on computers,
yep.
Things that you don't really need. Don't need to be running all the time.
Yeah, they can eat up battery life, and exactly. That's one of the biggest issues that I have always had with you know, the phones. Whenever I'm picking out a phone, I want something that has better battery life.
Because especially since they have a lot of phones now where the batteries are sealed, you can't replace them.
Yeah, and what we're basically trying to get around to, folks, here is, see, viruses, I won't say are totally gone, but I think for the most part, viruses aren't as prevalent now as they were back, say, 20 years ago. What's happening now with these apps and everything else is spyware and malware. And let me explain here just for a minute, and Jerry, you jump in too. With the spyware and malware, see, they try to put something, you know, sneak something in the background that can either steal, say, your email address list, or other information that's on your computer, or your computer, say, surfing habits. Just a little program that says, well, you go to these sites, and you do this type of shopping, and you do this and this. Well, what they do is with that stupid little app, it's not that stupid, they turn around and resell your name and information to these other spammers. So say you happen to like going to QVC, and, you know, they'll sit there and accumulate a list and offer it to spammers, say, of whatever. Oh, you know, you can get some great deals just like you would on QVC here. So you're getting all this spam, and it slows down your machine. And spyware, again, it's just finding out what you're doing, or it could steal your email list. They sell your email list. Now, here's the thing. Whereas before, when they were writing viruses, they didn't make any money off of that. When they sell your email address list, it's offering it to other spammers, and they can then, you know, make money off of that. They'll say to these spammers, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 500,000 emails for $25. Now, something that didn't cost them anything to do, these email list names are coming in by the droves because they infected your machine with their little program. They can turn around and make money off these other spammers for doing nothing.
And many free services you use, like I use Google Mail, I use Yahoo Mail, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember on Yahoo, which, you know, it's an excellent free service, but, you know, they need to monetize the way that they're offering the services to people. I remember having a conversation with somebody who was going to a trade show in Las Vegas, and all of a sudden on Yahoo, I'm seeing all these ads mm-hmm. about places to go and things to do in Las Vegas.
You know,
I have no interest in going to Las Vegas right now, but.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
They know I was mentioning
they
it.
They pick
email.
Up, or if you're surfing, you know, on the
exactly.
website, you know, like Google or any of these others, you know, other sites that you might use day to day, you search for something and all of a sudden you see all these other pop-up ads.
Uh-huh.
You know, if I was looking, say, for a new amp for my bass guitar, you know, and I just happened to go over to Guitar City, all of a sudden all these other ads are popping up down the bottom. Oh, great deals here or there,
exactly.
or whatever.
Exactly.
All right, tell you what, let's get back to the phones. We got Mark on the phone. Go ahead, Mark. What's your question?
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Yeah, we're doing, buddy. Yourself?
I'm good. going back to the gentleman with the mouse problem,
mm-hmm.
I had a similar problem to that, and it didn't end up being like a malware or spyware thing, but what it was the mouse kept reconnecting, like it was disconnecting and reconnecting. I get that same noise when I take a device off the computer via USB, and it was doing that all the time. So what I did is I went into the device manager, and I uninstalled the driver and let it re-recognize it again,
mm-hmm.
and it stopped. Yep. It must have been a corrupt driver.
That very well could be too, sir.
Because that's what happened to me, and it solved the problem and hasn't come back since.
Cool.
So I just wanted to throw that out there to you.
No, we appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
I say, that's one of the beauties of this show. You know, I mean, we can come up with a lot of great ideas and everything else and solutions.
It's your computer user group on the air.
Yeah, that's what we have always said. You know, we've been doing this now for over 25 years. And that has always been the beauty of it. I mean, between Nick, Steve, and I, we've got a lot of knowledge because we've been doing it since the 80s. And, yes, we are older than dirt. They usually say me because I invented it. But, you know, things can change and they can be, you know, different from each person. And it's always nice that a lot of our listeners out there, and I mean, we've got listeners here in Rochester, as you heard, Carl down in Pottstown, PA, and then we even get them calling in from Florida. They'll all chime in or they'll email us or, you know, even text us on the net here of another possible solution. And that's the beauty of it, because nobody's going to know it all.
That's for sure.
You know, and I mean, even with all our knowledge and that, you know, hey, stuff happened. Jerry, what else we got there in the news?
Well, again, in more Apple news, unfortunately, Apple's identified a problem in hard drives of a specific older iMac, 3-terabyte hard drives on the 27-inch Macs that were sold between December 20th, 2012 and September of 2013. They could fail, quote, under certain conditions, unquote, you know. So, you know, if you still have your same email address that you used when you registered the product, you'll already be getting email about it. If you don't, you can go online and apply for a replacement. If you've already purchased a replacement because mm-hmm. your drive failed, you can get a refund of that. But, you know, getting the cost of a 3-terabyte hard drive back is moot compared to trying to replace the data.
Yeah.
3 terabytes is a lot.
That is one heck of a lot of
data.
And if
you've got a lot of stuff on there, you know, that's why you say on this program every single week about backing mm-hmm. up and backing up to multiple places. You can back up to the cloud. You can back up to external devices. You know, first back up, always back up.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, if you can, back up in a couple of places because your backup is only good as the media it's stored on.
Right. And just like anything else, you know, I mean, even if you go out and buy a brand new hard drive, I mean, it's been my experience. I've had brand new hard drives right out of the bag. I've torn them open, go to install them in the machine, and they're dead right out of the bag. There are no guarantees that, you know, how long that's going to last. It's just like a light bulb is what I equate it to. You put a light bulb in, you know, it could last months, years, could pop, you know, all of a sudden get real bright and all of a sudden pop just because of the way it was made.
And backing up can be timely. It can take a long time to back up, that's for sure. But after you've done a full backup, then if you do regular incremental backups,
yeah,
those don't take any time at all, practically.
And for you folks that don't quite understand incremental, what incremental is like Jerry is saying, it'll sit there and do a full backup, every exact file. Then what it does with incremental, it's faster, because what it does is it just goes through and looks for the dates. And it compares it from the date that you did your last backup. That's got a date and time. So any file that you backed up before in those given folders, it compares it. And if it has changed, if it's even a minute or second after you made that backup, it will then add it to an incremental update. It will then update that particular file, just that file. So it is a lot faster. Yes, the first time is a pain in the butt. There's just no getting over that. It's just the way life is. And again, like we have said before, if it's that important to you, we don't want to hear, oh, I meant to back it up. Because, oh, we meant to get it back for you, but it ain't happening.
And, you know, they're really manufacturers trying to make it much easier for people. There's a lot of services and there's a lot of devices you can buy now and programs that do this backup work for you in the background. So even while you're doing other things, mm-hmm. you know, things are going on in the background. When your computer is slow and not doing anything else, it's looking to do backups or whatever for you.
The one thing I've always told folks, because it doesn't eat up that much electricity, really, I leave mine on all the time. Mine are on 24/7. The only thing I do is turn off the monitors. And I sit there and have my backups go at night. From 11 o'clock at night on, it's backing up to the cloud. And I've just set it up to do that automatically.
I do the same thing, but I make sure that all my devices are plugged into a UPS device.
Oh, yes.
Well.
Yes. Mine is in my neighborhood. Yeah. My house is built in 1928. And granted, you know, I've got the firehouse and that down the road and the ambulance in the area and that. But I'm sorry. I'm not going to take any chances. We have been without power. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the service does go out. So, yeah, I have the UPS, which will then shut your machine down if, in the event, you know, the power does go out. All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We've got Scott on the phone. Go ahead, Scott.
All right.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm very similar to you, Dave. I leave my my computer on 24/7. Mm-hmm. I have a Macintosh, iMac. I'm running some 10.10.3. The other day when I walked into my evening, I walked into my computer and woke it up. I saw that I was sharing with some address. I had no idea what that address was. Now, sharing is turned off for my preferences, and I have virus protection, and I have net protection, so I can't figure out what was going on. I just saw this address I was sharing to. I haven't seen it since. I shut my computer down and I've restarted several times since then, but I still see no sharing going on.
You got me kind of stymied, buddy, because unless Steve can, text us on in, working on a Mac is like me speaking Greek.
Right.
I don't do it.
But we do have in our purposes. Mm-hmm. Basically ask you what you want to share.
Right, and just like on the PC. Right, and you can, but I don't understand, unless something crawled in there and changed one of the settings temporarily, and you must have run maybe some software to turn it back off? You know, like spyware program or something else?
Right. That's what I was wondering about. Maybe I'll have to wait for Steve to answer that.
Yeah, like I say, I'm not sure, only because I don't know the Mac, but I would assume you guys now would, you know, on the Mac side of the world, would be running software that, you know, if something snuck in, because just the way the Macs are, it would sit there and say, hey, no, wrong, turn this back off. You know, something trying to get in there, you know, through a back door or through whatever on your operating system. You know, they're always looking for wormholes and that type of stuff and portals to get themselves into your machine and take it over through the operating system. And that's one thing Microsoft has been fighting for decades, you know, trying to constantly patch holes.
Yeah, in the operating system is susceptible.
Net barrier, which supposedly protects me against things coming in and going out. So that's why I was also surprised that this thing was happening.
What'd you say, Jerry?
I was just saying that every operating system has their problems with this now, you know, whether it's Linux or Windows or Android or, you know, even Chrome, you know, whatever it is, they all have their problems.
Yeah, I mean, Macs used to be, Scott, back in the day, you know, one of these things that, they were very smug about it, and, you know, I used to kid Steve about it all the time. Well, we don't get viruses. Well, that day's long past, and now you guys have joined the rest of us. That, you know, even you on the Mac side of the world are, you know, not as much, but stuff is getting in there and creeping in. And that's the sad state of, you know, our world right now that, you know, like I say, these guys are trying to get in there and steal your information. It's all about the information, because if they get information, they're making money one way or the other Unlike the old days of viruses, they create a virus and, oh yeah, I shut down over 60,000 computers. Woohoo! What'd you get out of it? Well, I shut down 60,000 computers. No, they don't want that anymore. They actually want some bucks for their time and effort. All right, buddy.
Thank you.
All right. If, like I say, if Steve does, you know, call in with something, you know, I'll we'll maybe be able to get it out on the air for you.
I'll be listening. Thank you.
All right, buddy. You take care. Yeah, that's beginning to be very, you know, cross platforms.
Well, it is, and, you know, especially iOS users. I mean, the number of iOS users out there between the iPads and the iPhones, they're increasing exponentially every day. And some of these, you know, malicious code writers and so forth, they go after the biggest audience they can get. So as the numbers of those kind of users grow, and you know, we're seeing now that users of devices in particular are growing a lot faster than users of computers.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're starting to see more and more malicious things happening on devices now, like we used to have on computers.
All right, tell you what, we've got some folks on the phone. Please hold. We'll get to you in a few moments here, but we got to take a short break from all these great folks that support. Member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright, joined with
Jerry Sword.
And my poor friend Nick Francesco definitely is suffering from a very, very sore throat. I mean, last night when I was talking to that poor guy, I felt so bad for him. I've never heard him hurting that bad. And, of course, Steve, who knows? All I know is the cops were chasing him last night, so, and hopefully he'll be here next week.
But, hard to imagine Nick not talking.
Yeah, it was scary because he left me a voicemail, and I picked it up on the way home last night, and it's like, who is this? And I had to look at the phone because, you know, his picture's there, and it didn't sound like it because he was talking to me. It was really funny, you know, and I'm like, okay, I better call him. And, of course, it was late, and I texted him. I said, you up? And all of a sudden, I get a call back on as I was driving home from Palmyra, and it's like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to make it. And I go, yeah, no, you probably shouldn't. You know, stay home, buddy. You know, Jerry and I will cover it. But tell you what, we're also joined by Paul from Brighton. Paul, what do you got going on there today?
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yeah, well, like everyone who has Windows, I've got the that little icon now in the lower right-hand part of the screen that indicates I could upgrade to Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
And like many users of Windows over the years, I am, you know, kind of wary about upgrading to the next version of Windows. I've had the experience of Windows ME, and I don't want to go through something like that again.
Oh, my beloved product!
So the question is, is it okay for me just to wait for a while until I'd like to let other people be the guinea pigs on this one?
In other words, you don't want to be the pioneer, the ones with the arrows in the back?
Exactly.
What are you running right now?
Windows 7.
As am I.
I'm pretty happy with Windows 7. I was also happy with XP. Those were both reasonable operating systems.
Yeah, and so are millions of other folks, very happy right now with Windows 7, until they actually see more of Windows out there debuting and seeing what's going on. Wouldn't you agree, Jerry?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of people that have to be right on the cutting edge, and on July 29th, when Windows 10 comes out, they're going to be, you know, installing it or whatever. But, you know, a lot of people know to wait and let other people figure out all the bugs and things that happen. I mean, Microsoft does a Herculean job trying to work out all the bugs ahead of time, but there are just trillions of different combinations of people using all kinds of programs and software and hardware. They're never going to get everything right this time.
And the thing of it is, with their track record, here's the thing, you know, I mean, they're not always the fastest to fix things.
Yeah, and I understand, am I correct or am I wrong that once you do upgrade to Windows 10, you cannot roll back and go back to Windows 7?
Right. What you would have to do there is back up your data.
Yeah.
literally wipe out the machine, reinstall from your CD of Windows 7, and put it back in. Now, do you have a spare machine?
I do have a second machine.
All right. You know what? I mean, here's...
And I do backups.
So. All right. Here's a suggestion. Try running Windows... You know, does the other machine have Windows 7 on it?
Yes, it does.
You know, if it's just an incidental machine and a way to bulletproof yourself, yeah, download an experiment, you know, on that other machine. But, I mean, that's what I'm going to do.
But, you know, at this point, I'm not really in the mood for experimentation. I'm a user at this point. You know, I've had a technical background, but as far as Windows is concerned, I'm just a user.
Oh, okay.
I don't enjoy
learning new operating systems. You're not like Nick and I.
There's other things to do in life besides learn new operating systems.
See, that's the whole thing. Nick and I, since Windows 286, we've always had great fun in seeing what we could do to blow it up.
Yeah. I've been using Windows since 3.1, but every time I go to a new operating system, mm-hmm, I do it when it comes installed on a new computer.
Yeah.
I've never upgraded a single computer. However, I did take a laptop into you to repair for me once. Mm-hmm. I happened to have Windows ME on it.
Yeah.
When it came back, it had a different operating system.
Yes, it did, because you know what? I would not sell that product or you know recommend that product to even my worst enemy.
My life was shortened as a result of using Windows ME. I lost years out of my life.
Before Windows ME came in, I used to have this full head of hair, and it was very dark.
Yeah.
If you know me now, you know I've got a full head of gray hair, and it's thinning badly,
right,
and it's all due to Microsoft.
I have a very short second question,
go ahead.
I keep getting these prompts to update Adobe to Adobe Air. What is the point of that? And I don't use it.
Well, Adobe Air really is just going to help you keep track of all your different Adobe products you have, whether it's Adobe Flash, Adobe Reader for PDFs, and so forth. And it will help in the updating of that process and automatically send you updates and notifications that any Adobe product that you might be using, there's updates available for it.
Yeah, the only thing I do use from Adobe is the PDFs and Flash occasionally. Although I've not always had good experiences with Flash.
Well, that's the problem with Flash, and that's why it's going away pretty much. But
right. One of the things Steve just chimed in, he texted me and he says, "Well, download it now while it's free. Don't forget. But don't install it yet." I mean, you could also do that. You know, put it just save it onto download to your desktop and then copy it off to a CD or a DVD.
Referring to Adobe now or the Windows 10?
Windows 10.
Windows 10. Okay.
Yeah, that's what Steve was suggesting. You know, but I think because they've bluntly said
it is free until July of 2016.
Yeah, I mean, you know, either you're going to make up your mind by then or you're not.
Right.
But right now, I mean, I think because of Gates's, or I shouldn't say Gates, Microsoft's background. I blame Gates because he's the originator of
the
company.
He's out of the picture now. Yeah,
but you know he's still guilty by the association.
Exactly.
And I've met the guy. So it's like one of these things. I'm sorry, your track record isn't that good. I'm sorry, buddy. You know, you're sitting there saying, "Oh," and now that he's given it free, I'm sorry. Anything that you know I've paid for over the years. You know, I mean, what operating system, other than Unix, have you ever heard of that they give away free, especially a major one?
Chrome.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe free in dollars, but not free in terms of your time, and that's the most valuable thing you have.
Yeah, exactly, and you can't get that back.
Right.
Once it's gone, it's gone. And I'm sorry, like, I think it's going to be like a lot of millions of other users. Like Jerry was saying, I'm going to want to wait and see it on another machine. Of course, me being just me, and I know Nick's the same way, I've got another machine that's sitting down in my shop. It's going to get Windows 10 on it, just so I can talk about it and know what it's about. Because, you know, doing this show, I've got to stay up on it. And if folks are caught, and I like to play. You know, I don't care. You know, I'll put it on this machine, and if it blows up, no biggie. I'm used to that. And, you know, I'll be the pioneer, you know, with the arrows in the back, because I'm used to that. And then hopefully, you know, once I start playing around with that, you know, I can report back to you folks.
Okay. Well, thanks for the tips.
Oh, no problem. Take care and enjoy the day.
You too. Bye-bye.
That's true of any operating system, though. I mean, there's a lot of places, especially in the enterprise, when you've got hundreds or thousands of PCs deployed in your place, you know, you just don't update that stuff, you know, right away. And there's still a great number of people out there, you know, using XP as long as they can because they have a large install base and it's, you know, it's painful to go to something newer with all those users that you have.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, I'm sorry. Microsoft has burned themselves. You know, doing what they do, you know, over the years. I mean, we've had Windows ME, which was a program, as everybody knows, over the years since that came out, I detested. It was a piece of junk. It was just something quick to get out, and it never lasted. And then Windows Vista, another product that they didn't do their homework in. They just got it out there, and it wasn't compatible. And I can remember a number of my customers at the time, they were getting these Vista machines and told, well, yeah, no, that printer's not going to work, and you got to go out and buy a new printer. And they're going, what? You know, and this is in businesses. No, that was unacceptable. And why they'd bring out a product, you know, that wasn't going to have universal drivers that would work with all printers. That's just the way it's been since Windows 3.1. Uh-huh. You know, they've just been always there. And, you know, you could hook up a printer, it sees it, and you might have to update a little bit of a driver or that for a unique one. But these blatantly just didn't work. I mean, it was just awful to work with. Awful. We got another story there?
Well, yeah, following the Windows 10 theme,
yeah.
A lot of people are going to miss out on a feature of Windows 10 that they're probably not going to see for a long time, and that's called Windows Hello. You know, everybody's trying to solve this password problem. We continually try to encourage people to make more robust passwords, to change them frequently, and so forth, and that's very difficult for a lot of people. Well, Windows Hello would use your own face to recognize you and give you access. So when you sit down in front of the computer, mm-hmm. your camera sees it's you, and it automatically logs you in and says, oh, there's Dave. Here's your desktop. Here's your stuff. Go to it.
Okay. Know?
The problem with that is that you need to use what's called a depth camera. The only person that's making that right now is Intel. It's still expensive, very expensive.
Ouch.
The depth camera is used so that it can see through makeup you may have applied or beards that you've grown or whatever. So it's probably going to be a while before that's available. Microsoft is touting that as a great feature, and it is a great feature when it finally becomes available and cheap enough for manufacturers to give you the right kind of cameras. Right now, Windows Hello would give you access three ways. One through a fingerprint reader, which they're notorious for not working properly.
Yep.
One if you have a depth camera, and three if you have an iris reader. Well, iris reader cameras are a lot of expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It requires you to get way down, bend over, look very close to the monitor.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to happen. So, you know, you're going to hear about Windows Hello, and you're going to hear about Windows Passport, which is the same thing that gives you facial recognition to websites. But it's not going to happen in the near future.
Now, another story Nick had here was Windows 10 is likely to come in on a pen drive and not on a DVD. It's no secret that Windows 10, Microsoft is hoping to make a clean break from the past. For example, this is going to be the first Windows that Microsoft will give away for free to the individuals and home users. Windows 10 is also likely to be the first operating system from Microsoft that will be sold on a pen device instead of the usual DVD. According to a listing at Canada's website, the Windows 10 may have a name like Microsoft Win Home 10 32-bit/64-bit English, one license USB flash drive, and then some numbers. With a cost of around $100.
Okay.
Well, that's not bad. Windows moving to pen drives is something that has been in the offerings for a while. Compared to DVDs, pen drives are faster, easier to carry and store, all overall less of a hassle.
In there are also devices that don't have optical drives in them.
Yeah.
They have a USB
B drive. Yeah. That's more and more, especially like the Chromebooks.
Right, and all the portable devices are trying to make lighter and more portable. And
flash memory is faster than a DVD drive anyways, right. Less chance of failure.
Uh-huh.
I mean, again, folks, I've had folks with flash drives, too. They're a little rough on them sometimes, pulling them in and out. They're sturdy devices, but when folks yank them out, they bend them sometimes at an angle, and they'll snap.
Yeah, I've had clients who buy, like, an older router, and they have at home is a tablet. They don't have a computer. They have a tablet, but they want Wi-Fi. So they get a router, and it says, well, put this disk in. They steal your setup. There's nothing in which to put a disk.
Yep. Well, Windows 10 will be launched on July 29th, so, you know, I mean, we're just a little over a month away, so it will be available for free to all users who have a genuine version of Windows 7, 8, or Windows 8.1 on their computer. People who run pirated copies of Windows will also likely to get the free upgrade of Windows 10, although they won't turn their Windows instantly into a genuine copy.
Be prepared here on Soundbites, though. For August, September, and October, you're going to get floods of people calling about problems with Windows 10.
Oh, most definitely. All right, tell you what, we're coming up at the top of the hour, and we got some folks here that want to pass on some great information. But you know what? Like Nick would say, yeah, you've wasted 1 hour of your life here listening to the Soundbites with me, Dave Enright, and my friend Jerry Seward. But you know what? There's still another hour coming right here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Follow Jazz 90.1 on Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Jerry Seward.
And our friends Nick and Steve are not here this week, but they will join us again next week. And we have Matthew on the phone from Buffalo. Go ahead, Matthew.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Great.
I kind of ran into a dilemma. I was at one of these big box stores. I don't want to say the name on the air.
Okay.
Yellow, blue, perhaps you might know. All right. So I was there, I was trying to buy a keyboard, and I was worried about it because, you know, I run Ubuntu and stuff like that, and I was worried and concerned because, you know, some of the things, they have drivers for the things or whatever, and I don't know if it was compatible, so I had to make a hard decision, you know, to go with the hardwired USB, perhaps, or... the one I wanted was, a wireless one, but I wouldn't know if it would work with my, computer or whatever. So I was debating, and, I don't know things like that, but I guess I got to have to ask you guys. So do you think that wireless keyboards and stuff would work with, like, Linux drivers, perhaps? I'll take the call off the air.
That's a good one.
Well, a lot of them do. In a lot of places, you know, they'll have hardware compatibility lists and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Another advantage you have from going to a big box store like that is if it doesn't work, you can take it back.
Yeah, that's true. And always exchange it for a wired one.
Correct.
But one of the things you might want to do, and that's the great thing about Linux, is go over to the forums and see if somebody else has posted a question about that. Because I'm sure Matthew, you're not the only one that's had, an issue or second thoughts about hooking up a wireless mouse, although it's not something that's new. I mean, wireless mice have been around for at least over a decade. So I would assume, again, you could become the first three letters of it by doing that. But again, it's something that should, I would think, be built into Unix. You might have to put in another driver. Again, I haven't played with that. excuse me, that much. But again, before you do it, like Jerry said, you can always take it back if you're not. But before that, do a little homework and actually see, you know, if it's going to work, you know, and off the forums.
Yep, use your friend Google and Bing. You know, search by both the keyboard name and the operating system you're using, and you'll probably find that somebody else has already asked that question, and they may already have, you know, the answers to that. They're all different.
Right. Tell you what, let's go back to the phone. We got Tim on the phone. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, hi, guys. You were talking about the cloud storage earlier, so I thought I'd... I'm always doing backups, but it's a real pain in the butt, more than anything, because I have to go back and see which updating the file. This incremental updating thing is genius. That's exactly what I need to cut to the chase, because trying to back up the files, not knowing what I have and haven't backed up based on what I have and haven't updated, is what really slows me down. So I was wondering if you could tell me what you feel is the best cloud storage that's also the least expensive and hopefully the most private as far as putting business materials up on it goes. And then if they have an incremental type of backup option or incremental backups for hard drives too, do you have to keep the file names the same name? And then I'll have one last question after that.
No problem. You know what, Tim? You're lucky, because we have one of the experts sitting right here in the studio.
Awesome.
My friend Jerry Seward can definitely fill you in on that. Go for it, Jerry.
There are dozens and dozens of good, either free and or inexpensive places on the cloud where you can do your backups. When it comes to doing things like incremental backups and so forth, in addition to just having a place where you back up your files and an account to do it, you also need to have a service that does that for you, that will automatically look at your local devices and determine what's new, what's incremental or not. So those are things you usually pay for. You have to subscribe to something else like that, like Carbonite and so forth. When you buy a service that runs in the cloud for you as a service, plus it stores the information in there. There are also many programs that you can buy for your own devices, like Cronus and so forth, that will do these things for you. They will do the backups for you. They will do the incremental backups, and they will either move them to an external hard drive, or some of them now are also moving them into one or more of your cloud accounts. There's also a couple of programs out there. I got one the other day from a company called Coffee Cup that makes a program called Places that lets you copy and or move your files from one of your cloud places to another cloud place, which can be convenient because the cloud space you're sending to is only as good as the company who's running it and as long as they stay in business. Because it's usually free and you're not paying for it, you run the risk of any one of those services going away tomorrow. They may give you 3 or 4 months' notice they're going away, but, you know, some free things do go away, and some things that were free begin to charge. So, fortunately, you got a lot of places to go. There's the iCloud, of course. There's Google Cloud. There's OneDrive. You know, those are the major ones that are out there. But there's dozens of others out there, like Dropbox and so forth.
Yep.
I'm also finding almost every day there are new services. For example, I didn't know this, but I just found the other day, I'm an Amazon Prime customer. As an Amazon Prime customer, they have a service to store unlimited number of your photos that aren't compressed. Like the new Google Photo, they will give you unlimited storage, but they compress the photos.
Okay.
They don't do that with Amazon's photo storage. So you can unlimited, plus they give you an extra 5 gigs. So new opportunities on the cloud are out there every single day. And that's one of the beauties of the internet, is that it's constantly evolving and there's new services and better services every day.
Of the top three, what would you list?
Google Drive, definitely, iCloud, and the OneDrive from Microsoft. Those are, you know, three big players. They're not going away.
Yeah.
Google's not going away. Microsoft's going away. Apple's not
Google
going away.
Google for sure.
Well, none of them are going away. Now, they may change the terms of their services and things over time.
Yeah, but.
But not only are they going away, but, you know, they've got the infrastructure to keep it running well and to take care of problems and to make sure that it is available 99.999% of the time.
Could you spell that Cronus for me, whatever it was?
I'm not sure exactly how it's spelled now, but it's something I know a lot of my Macintosh users are using Cronus, and it's also available for the PC now, I guess.
Okay.
I think it's
okay.
Called Acronus, perhaps.
Might be.
Okay. The last question, and then I'll let you go, was just you had mentioned in passing, I think you were talking about, like, physical safety with the hard drives, like UPS or something?
Yes. What uninterrupted power supply service.
Oh, okay.
A UPS. And basically what it is you're plugging all your devices into that. And depending on the type of UPS you buy, it will keep your machine going when the power goes out. Now, what it does is it will safely shut your machine down instead of, you know, like when your power goes out and everything just automatically goes dead.
Yeah.
No, what the UPS does is send a signal to the with the software on your computer that you install with the UPS. Hey, I've got a power out. You've got anywhere from, you know, say 30 minutes to safely finish what you were doing and shut down. If you were not home, what it would do, and the power went out, and you had something, you had your machine going, it would safely shut it down, close everything out, and everything would be protected, not getting any shock or sudden jolts because of power surges.
That's awesome. Now, speaking of keeping things on for a long time, do you guys have any opinions of those external fans that vacuum the heat out from the fan, or the ones that sit underneath your laptop?
Heat, if you can reduce the amount of heat, especially in a laptop,
yeah,
go for it. Because, yes, laptops can get hot in your lap.
Yeah.
And fan units like that, yes, I would say yes.
Okay, okay.
Would be my vote.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the backup software I was talking about is called Acronis, Acronis, Acronis.com for the PC and Mac.
I'm sorry,
Acronis.
Got it. Awesome. Okay, I'm all set. Thanks so much for your time.
You're quite welcome. You know, that's funny. We sit here, and I just have, you know, a flashback here. We're talking about gigs, terabytes, 3 terabytes storage space and everything else, and how cheap it is right now. And I can remember back in the days when I worked at the Big Yellow Box, installing 5 meg hard cards. That's 5 meg, folks.
Yes.
And that was considered a lot of space.
And they were several hundred dollars.
Yes!
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how cheap storage has become.
Oh, and they practically pay you to take it off the shelf now.
Yeah. And the same with, say, even memory. Mm-hmm. Memory for a machine. Well, back in the day when I wanted to go up from 32 meg up to 64 or 128, it's like, it's gee, can I afford it this month? You had to think about it. And now, memory's so cheap, it's like, yeah. Put in 4 gig, you know, 2 4-gig sticks.
Well, I remember the 8K.
Yeah, oh yeah. I remember back in the old days, it was the trash 80.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working off of, you know, 32K on an 8-inch floppy. And we sit there and write code for that.
It's amazing.
You know, we have come just so far. It's just unbelievable. You got another story there?
You don't need a Facebook account anymore to use the Facebook Messenger program. And a lot of people are using Messenger on their devices because, number one, it's free. But also, there's a lot of things you can do on Messenger that you don't have to use your data plan for. They use it over Wi-Fi. So, you can then correspond with all the other people who are on Facebook. Even if you don't have a Facebook account, you can message with other people who use Messenger, whether or not they're using Facebook. And a lot of people are using the Messenger program now because it does so many things. It does group chatting. It does video conferencing. It does video calling. You can actually call and talk to people.
Okay.
You can make phone calls and so forth. So Messenger is becoming very popular, and a lot of people don't have Facebook accounts for whatever reason.
Yeah.
They don't want one or whatever.
Yeah, they don't want, you know, because I've always said some folks live too much of their lives on Facebook.
I have a lot of folks who are on Facebook that never post anything, but they like reading what other people do, and that's fine too. You know, I understand that.
And I've gotten to where, you know, again, I'm there, and, you know, I post some stuff in that, but not a lot. And I've got a lot of friends, you know, that I was in the service with and everything else. And that's the best way to stay in touch with each other, you know, because we're spread all over the country. Same with a lot of my family members. I mean, oh, that is cute. Now, who is that?
That's Nick.
Get out.
That's Nick's. He posted that on Facebook. That's little Nicky.
Whoa. Jerry's just showing me, folks, because I know this is radio and you can't see it, but he just pulled up a picture of this cute little kid with these big chubby cheeks, and it's Nick! And he doesn't have a dress on. What I'm referring to is I have actually seen Nick one time in a dress. I should explain, he was working Blackfriars and doing a play, him and one other gentleman, and they were doing multiple parts.
I've seen him in robes at the Renfest.
And he had to come out. One of his characters was a woman. He had good gams.
Okay.
Of course, that's the other thing. You know, Nick back then, for that, had to shave his beard off.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was one of the few times Nick without a beard is like, whoa, that didn't happen too much. Well, tell you what. Let's go back to the phone, and we got our friend from Joe from Cheek. Hey, hiya, Joe. Yes. What do you know? What's happening,
well,
my friend?
I'd like to explain a little bit about how USB works, the high-level design of it. That there are things in that which are called device classes. That means you can implement the software similarly no matter what operating system it is, whoever makes it, whatever. There's, for example, a USB storage class, which would be your thumb drives, your external hard drives, that sort of thing. The mouse class, and for Matt and Buffalo, the keyboard class. So it should work just fine on his Ubuntu system to plug in any sort of USB keyboard, because that would just be the keyboard class. You know, it doesn't matter whether Logitech makes it or Microsoft, or whoever else makes keyboards. It should work just fine. The only thing with wireless keyboards that I would caution is that I own a Logitech keyboard and mouse wireless combo, and unfortunately, Logitech only makes Windows software for that. What I'm talking about...
Hey, Joe. Joe,
yes, sir.
Can I put you on hold just for a moment? We'll come right back to you. I've got to take a break. But, yes, I'd love you to fill us, our listeners, in on more of this. And, we'll be back in just a moment. More great information right here at Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Jerry Sword.
And hopefully by next week we will have Nick and Steve back. But right now we've got Joe from Cheek. Joe, where'd you go? Uh-oh. I think you dropped again. Hold on one moment.
Is this Joe? Hello? All right, hold on, Joe. All right, hold on.
All right, I think I got the technical difficulties straightened out. Joe?
Yes, sir.
All right. Yes.
Unfortunately, the phone system hung up on me, so I had to dial back in.
We had a little technical. Go ahead.
Yeah. So with the wireless keyboards, the one thing you want to make sure is if your keyboard vendor supports it, turn on encryption between the keyboard and the computer. Otherwise, you're sitting there typing passwords to your bank or whatever else, or to your password manager or whatever, and anybody that's sitting there with appropriate equipment can just sniff those keystrokes and figure out your password. Now, unfortunately, I haven't seen any Linux software for the Logitech wireless keyboard I have. So whenever I'm typing passwords and stuff, I have to go to a wired keyboard to type that sensitive sort of stuff in.
Okay.
Yeah,
go ahead. No, go ahead. No. I thought you still had a little more there.
Unfortunately, I'm using VoIP, but it's got horrible delay right now, so that's why.
Oh, okay.
kind of talking at each other a little bit.
Yeah, no. Go ahead.
So that, you know, Matt in Buffalo, that's you should be just fine plugging in any sort of keyboard. It's just be aware that you really got to be careful about typing sensitive stuff like passwords in.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know,
yeah,
you have the potential of people stealing that. You know, it's not that it's going to happen, but it's kind of like, I think I'll go on to my bank's website and not use HTTPS. No, not a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep. Now, if folks have to use, little due diligence, and thinking of what they're doing, and where they're doing it. You know, like anything else, like we've said before, they're out there and they're trying to steal your information any which way they can. Which brings up another thing that I saw in talking about, things like USBs and wireless devices. There was a gentleman, he's got a service right now, and he's trying to provide security for these credit cards. And what it is, a lot of these new credit cards, Joe, you can just go up to, say, you just bought some gas, and you can just go up there, and you've got your credit card, and you just have to tap it, and it automatically, reads it. Well, he went around with this, looked like a little folder, like a little binder, and in there, he had a reader. Mm-hmm. And all the guy had to do was go up and just be within, a foot or two of these folks, and if they had any of those credit cards in their wallet, it read them. It read all the information on that strip as though it ran the credit card through there. The name, the bank, the credit card number, expiration date, and everything. And he's trying to,
Actually, it wouldn't be on the strip. It would be on a near-field communications chip embedded in the credit
card. Right, but it's in the credit card, yeah.
I had one of those from my bank. It was a debit card that I used for ATMs.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed the little bump for the NFC chip in there. I asked my bank, hey, you going to issue me one without this PayPass feature in it?
Yeah.
No, we don't do that. Well, I ended up drilling the sucker out of the card because I wasn't about to let someone passively sniff my card details. It's like that was one of the reasons I was so excited about getting the original Nexus 7. Had the secure element in it, but for storing the credit card and being able to tap and pay.
Mm-hmm.
But the feature is, in software, you can turn that off to stop all passive sniffing of the data.
Okay.
You think of a credit card as a transponder.
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
NFC reader sends out a burst of energy and turns the chip on and says, hey, give me what you got.
Mm-hmm.
It sends a command to send it, and then the card responds, oh, here's my data that you wanted.
Right.
But if you have an active element, like an actual piece of, computer hardware, mm-hmm. you can shut that stuff off, so it'll never respond.
There are a number of places where you can buy sleeves for your credit cards that have that, so it'll protect it, but it's just unfortunate that you have to go that length to do that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Joe.
Oh, yeah, very true. Oh, and
yeah,
yes,
go
sir.
Ahead. No, go ahead. Finish your statement. I stepped on you.
I was going to say that there have also been, unfortunately, infrared cameras that have been shrunk down to the size of a smartphone. So you have people going around with some attachment to the back of their iPhone or Galaxy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What they're doing is they're looking at the PIN pads. They're behind people that are entering their PINs for credit card transaction, and they're seeing the heat signature off the buttons. And as you can imagine, the next button you press is a little warmer than the one you just pressed, so they can tell from the heat trail, oh, that was their PIN. So if they can somehow manage to sniff the credit card data as well,
yeah,
you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, to put it bluntly, yeah. A question for you, though, Joe. Jerry and I were just talking about
this
because we both have Nexus tablets. And have you done the update on yours? What version are you running?
I am still solidly on 4.4.4. All the things I have the original Nexus 7 2012 edition. And All the reports I hear about it being unusably slow and such sort of things, until I'm actually forced to update because the software doesn't work anymore, I'm solidly on 4.4.4.
Amen.
You know what? Well, unfortunately, I did do the update, and all I can tell you, Joe, you're a wise man. That right now, my tablet.
Are you all the way up to 5.1 though?
I believe so. Because you know,
okay.
Like I say, I'm like the pioneer with. I love the arrows in my back. I'll give it a shot and see what happens. And you know, I don't have any problem coming back to tell folks, don't do it. Yo, run! Don't update because you know what? That tablet right now. Luckily, I wound up getting another tablet. Through a great offer that I'm using instead for my cell carrier, because that Nexus 7 has slowed down and made it totally, totally unusable. And the only thing, and I just haven't had the time right now, is I'm looking to see if I can do a factory reset.
No, that's not going to help you much.
Yeah, I'm afraid that it's going to stick there and still keep on the same operating system that I installed on it, you know, doing the EEPROM and updating that.
All right, what you need to do is you need to go to the Google site and you just search for factory images.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What you can probably still do is download the 4.4.4 factory image.
That's what I'm thinking, because there's nothing on there. That I can lose it. It doesn't matter. I can reinstall the apps and that type of stuff. Everything I have, you know, that I create is up on the cloud because I use the Google Drive. So you know,
what you need to do is you go get yourself the factory image and compress it.
Yeah.
You also need to get Fast Boot on your computer. That's the utility.
Yep.
That works with the Nexus 7. It's basically what they call going into bootloader mode.
Mm-hmm.
You hold down volume down while pressing the power key, and hold it until you see something on the screen, and it will go into fast boot or bootloader mode.
And what
you do then is you connect your tablet up to your computer via USB, and there'll be, well, if you're on Linux, there'll be a shell script.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on Windows, there'll be a batch file. It will go through the various steps that will use the fastboot command to reflash your device with the image. And then it'll reboot and do a factory reset wipe. So you don't have any data to wipe out. But it will
do
a factory wipe during the process. And you will be back on a brand spanking new Nexus 7 with 4.4.4.
You don't know how lucky you are. You and Jerry here have, you know, not done it. And like I said, I can tell anybody else out there with the Nexus 7, if you haven't done the update, don't. Because right now, like I say, I've tried, you know, because I went on the forum and they had, you know, other recommendations. Well, you could try doing this. It should speed it up a little. I'm not getting any younger here, folks, you know. And I've seen, you know, grass grow faster than, you know, this thing moving along right now. Like I say, it just got me so frustrated, I couldn't tolerate it anymore. It's just like, no.
Well, supposedly they've got a 5.2 coming out, and in the long future, they have 6.0 coming out, or Android M.
Yeah, like I say, I'm not going to worry about it because I got this other tablet. It's a nice big 8-inch tablet. It's fast. You know, it's connected up through my phone plan and that type of stuff. Excuse me. And again, I just set it up to, connect to the cloud with the Google Drive. All my documents and pictures and anything else is up there, so I don't have to worry. It's all backed up because on my regular computer at home.
Too.
Yeah, everything. You know, it's all there, so that's the beauty of the cloud. So.
Indeed.
Yep.
I just really fear the day that they have some sort of data breach at Google, and we hear about all these other institutions which get the compromises, and then millions of passwords and logins are released or well, not password hashes most likely,
right.
But you know, you get somebody with the appropriate hardware and programming, they'll try and brute force the hashes to see what your password was,
yeah,
and
true.
Then impersonate you.
Yep.
So that's no fun.
Yeah, no, and I think most of them, though, you know, and I don't want to sound too flip about it, but I think for the most part, you know, a lot of folks, you know, unless there's some big, you know, big wig or some big company, it's not, you know, worth the time and effort for a lot of these hackers to get into Joe Schmo's account because, you know, unless he's some rich millionaire or, you know, some else, to spend the time to get a few bucks versus, you know, trying to hack into some big company or some celebrity or somebody else that, you know, where they might be able to really make some bucks. It's I don't know. Just my opinion.
Oh, it's more than that. It's identity theft.
Mm-hmm.
You'll smear my bad name across, you know.
Yeah.
All the credit reporting agencies because, oh, you just take out, you know, a mortgage in my name and all of a sudden, well, you know, well, for me, you know, two mortgages, I already have the one that I'm paying off.
Yeah.
To give me another one? I don't know.
Oh, that was one of the other things. This is a whole nother topic, but talking about getting calls and that, I got this urgent call this past week on my cell phone. From M&T Bank notifying me that I've got to give them a call because now there's a hold on my credit card. Of course, I was up at the Jazz Fest. I didn't answer. I listened to it. And they want me to call this number back. So for the heck of it, I just called back. And they wanted me to put in my credit card number.
I've had a lot of people who got that call this week who don't have M&T accounts.
Yeah, wait a minute. I don't have an M&T card. Sorry. I was born at night, just not last night. You know, and you think I'm going to punch in my credit card number over the phone without talking to somebody?
Well,
no.
Mistake number one is calling them back at the number they give. What you do is you go to a website or phone directory or something, and you look up the number for EG M&T, and you call them on that number, not rely on whatever they give you, because
right.
You know what they give you.
Yeah. All right, Joe. Well, you know what? We kind of burned through.
Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
No, thank you for calling back there. I'm sorry for the little glitch that we had, but we've got to come up on another break. So you take care, Joe, and we'll talk to you again soon, my friend. And like I said, we're coming up on another break, folks, but stay tuned. We still got another 20 minutes here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Jerry Seward.
And both Nick and Steve hopefully will be back next week here at Soundbites. But meanwhile, Jerry and I are kind of going on. Matter of fact, we're, again, going over the price of the data. I mean, it has just gotten so cheap. And going back to you know, DVD drives and everything else, they're slowly fading away, too.
Exactly, because more and more people are using devices and, you know, portable things. You know, going to the cloud is reverting back to the very, very early days of computer programming. That's how the Internet started. You know, back when computers took up a whole building
mm-hmm.
and cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, you didn't have too many of them. And so people at MIT in Massachusetts and people in Stanford Research Institute in California
mm-hmm.
wanted to be able to run programs on computers. So they, you know, that's one of the reasons why the Internet developed, so that from remote locations you could run computer, you can have access to computers and not just data, but actually run the programs that way over long distances.
Yeah. Even though Al Gore thought he invented it, he didn't.
No,
but I mean, flash drives. Now, that's the other thing, folks. You got to watch out for it. You know, flash drives are very convenient. I mean, they are quick, they're easy, they're fast. I say, most devices you can just quick plug them in and everything else. Here's the thing, though. Most of them don't have write protects on them.
Well, you can't get them, but they're you have to get them separately.
Exactly. You've now, if you're going to be using a flash drive and using it on other, you know, from wherever, taking it from home to work or everything else, and somebody else is using that computer, it might cost a few bucks more, but the flash drives with the write protects. Now, I'm taking you back, way back. Because DVDs you can't write to once they're burnt. But I'm taking it back to the days, if you folks remember, these things called floppy disk. They came in the 8-inch, 5 1/4, and then 3 1/2. And they had this little device on it that you could slide this little lever on the, you know, at least the 3 1/2s, right, and lock your files.
Or put a piece of tape over the notch.
And on the... 5 1/4 and the 8-inch, you had to put this little tab over the notch. And once you did that, nothing else could be written to, or you couldn't erase anything off of it because it was what they called write protect. Now, one thing I've gotten in the habit of doing is I've got this cool little USB gadget. And what it does is it takes a SIM card. So I went out and bought a SIM card, 32 gig, and on the side of a SIM card, if you folks have used them, say, in your cameras and everything else, you might notice that there's a little notch on it. And that notch, you can slide one way or the other, and when you do, you're locking it. So what I'll normally do is I'll load stuff up, especially if I'm working on computers and that, because, you know, it was key in my business not to infect one machine to the other. So I found this USB device because they are faster than everything else. I could put all my programs on it, lock it. Now I could put it in one customer's machine or somebody else's. I didn't have to worry about moving a virus from one to the other to the other. As a matter of fact, I had one client say, well, maybe you brought it in. I go, I guarantee you I didn't, because this thing is write protected. And there's no way I want to carry a virus from your machine to my house or back to my network. I'm sorry. It's just not worth it.
Another problem I've had a lot of clients have with using flash drives, they lose them. They're small.
Oh, yeah.
They're easy to get lost.
Yeah, big time. You know, because, like I say, they're, what, you can get them maybe, what, 2 inches long? And,
or less, yeah.
Yeah. And they're, but again, you know, it's good, you know, fast, cheap. Portable, moving of your data from one to the other, especially if somebody, oh, I got to quick grab this file, put it on there, and then they, you know, go into work and pop it in there, and, you know, it, like you say. And the other thing, which I was warning folks about, is when you put them into the machine, slow down. Because I've also had folks bring me these flash drives and say, can you get the data off of it? And 99% of the time, it's no. Because what happens is, it's yes, that looks like a very sturdy little device. But when you put it in there and you pull it out on an angle, whether it's up or down, you can bend it. And what it is that little, those prongs are very thin. It's not that thick of a, you know, circuitry that you're sliding this into. If you look at the side of a USB, and sliding in there, there's a little circuit board in there. It's not very thick. And that has like 4 or 5 fingers that are connected to this circuit board, actual, that controls the memory chip. And if you pull on that, you're going to break it. And once that's broken, taking that apart and trying to resolder, and I've tried to resolder a few of them, and I haven't been able to do it because it just shorts it or whatever, you know, because of breaking it and moving it, it breaks the circuit and it shorts it out, and it's like, sorry. And I had one lady, I felt bad for her, because she had her thesis on it, and we couldn't get it off. But where I did wind up being the hero is she brought her machine in, because she thought it got erased there. With a program there, I was able to pull it back.
Okay.
It was a, it wasn't the complete one that she had backed up before, but it wasn't like she had to totally restart all over. And yes, she was upset that she lost the one final, and she had to redo some work. She had some notes, and it was going to be some work for her, but at least it helped her a little.
Oftentimes, if you can still read the media, you still might be able to recover a file, even if it's been deleted. But
so, and I know Jerry will back me up on this, and you hear Nick and Steve and I say it countless times: back up, back up, back up, because you know what, folks, we hear folks say, "I don't have the time." You're going to find the time recreating some stuff when, all of a sudden that device fails on you.
Well, speaking of that, Nick, or rather Steve, texted in with another suggestion for backup.
That's a
program called Crash Plan. You'll find that online at www.code42, that's code42.com. Maybe Steve can add that to the website this week sometime for the listeners. Code42.com is a program that Steve suggests is good for doing automatic backups both to local hard drives and to the cloud.
Oh, cool. Again, folks, if you're looking into it, it's not that expensive. And if you have any particular photos, and more folks, because of the way of our phones and everything else, we're doing everything digitally now. Folks using an actual camera is becoming less and less prevalent. Everybody's, I got my phone. Here, I'll quick take a picture. And they're doing that at family functions and everything else. And they're, passing and sharing it to, other members on Google and whatever.
Yeah, I read online not too long ago that there are more pictures taken in a day by an iPhone than all the digital cameras combined.
Yeah, I believe it, and that's the way our world has come. So, seriously, if you haven't done it before, seriously, take the time and look into doing cloud backup. Because, in like Jerry was suggesting, what were those three again?
Well, the big ones are Google Drive, mm-hmm. the iCloud from Apple, and mm-hmm. Microsoft's OneDrive.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, look into one of those. And even, excuse me, if it's not big enough, you can always buy a little more space. And believe it or not, it is very cheap. And to have the security that, everything is there, and they do a darn good job of encrypting it. And some folks get paranoid, the government or everybody else might get into it. No, not likely. Your stuff is safe up there. It's encrypted, and, you shouldn't have any issues, of it up there, especially pictures and everything else. The government doesn't care about your grandmother's 86th birthday and everything else.
However, they all have different bells and whistles and different services that they offer. And for example, one of the things that the Google Drive has, or the Google Photos now, is that you can actually search for photos by keyword. So it will look at the photos and, for example, if you say, "Show me all the pictures I took that have a fence in them," it will look at all your photos and show you those that have a fence somewhere in the picture.
Isn't it? How far we have come since the 80s. I mean, again, as you heard us folks talk before, how far things like memory and everything else, and we've evolved that the desktop is becoming secondary. The tablet and our phones are becoming our primary uses now of entering data and computing, actually computing with other folks or, communications. It's just become a way of life, and, it's wild what the next, let's just say next couple of years, I won't even say farther out 5 years, just within the next couple of years, how much things are going to change and, change our world and the way we do things. I mean, the watches and that now with, everything on our wrist. And
I love the virtual assistants, Google Now, Apple Siri, Amazon's Echo, Windows Cortana.
It's unbelievable, and it's all there. And you know what? That music tells me, as Nick would say, you've wasted another 2 hours of your life listening here to Soundbutts. But I want to thank Jerry Seward for coming in. Thank you very much there, sir. And filling in for both. He did double duty, folks. He filled in for both Nick and Steve. But tell you what, don't go away. George is here in the building. And, of course, trusty old Mike is there to keep him in control. But we will be back next week. Both Nick, Steve, and I will be here. And we're going to turn it over to some more great music right here at Member Supported Jazz 90.1.